take up the order that's there, our plan is to amend in the fourth item on the agenda into the sixth item to the fourth item, and we're going to carry the number five, which is the 2223, separately. That's going to be a work in progress, and I hope the public approves, likes how we're going to get a lot of input on some of these things. Some of these changes are occurring even as we're in the meeting here, so I appreciate that. For starters, we're going to take up House File 2277, and if Jerry, you want to bring your entourage here, I understand you have a brief discussion. I'd like to have some detail on the recodification tweaks, however, that you could kind of go point by point as we... first, I'd like to reconsider the approval of an amendment. I think we'll put the amendments on, and you can tell us what we did. How would that be? So it's amended in the order that we had... We did an amendment last time, remember, on behalf of Mr. Vandeveer, who was to be here. That was meant to be a placeholder, and now that can be removed. And so I'd like to move to reconsider the action by which we adopted. H2277A1. A040945. And so we first would reconsider it, and then we would vote it down, I guess. So all in favor of reconsideration, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Nothing. Aye. Opposed. It's reconsidered. I really don't like this amendment anymore. Please vote against it.
All in favor of the amendment, please say aye.
All those opposed, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Thank you very much for being so disagreeable. That's out of there now. You're out of there. And now we have, there's a replacement amendment. There's a whole series of amendments. That's right. And I'm going to instruct staff ahead of time that if you have the authority to do what we meant to do in your work after the meeting, all right? Because this is all figured out, believe it or not, but it's just kind of complicated because when the bill came in, there's another bill coming up on Monday. I should announce if you're here for the 22, whatever the bill we almost took up today. 2764 or whatever that other department monster bill was that showed up on Monday. We're doing that on Monday later. That's not going to be taken up today. So if you were here for that, the policy bill from DHS.
DHS policy.
2724. We're not doing that one today. So if you were hoping for that, you can be relieved. And, I apologize if you thought we were doing it today because I thought we were doing it too. So there's a raft of amendments. And in terms of these large bills, where it could touch many parts of our state, we've asked the different groups to weigh in to the department and the revised the House staff and to make it even better. And this is a result of that work. And so I hope you see your amendment go on. First one to move is Amendment A7. And this is the one that will take care of Mr. Vandeveer. Is that correct? And we'll put these in the order that we would like, and then we'll discuss them all if members are okay with that. So all in favor of A7, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. And it's adopted. Next one. These are just a whole bunch of them.
Yep.
And Amendment A1.
That's passed last week.
We did A1. You can help me out, Jerry, if I get skunked here. A04, that's the main one. A6, that's an important one. People kind of like that one a lot. I'd like to move Amendment A6. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed. Adopted. A8 is kind of important too. That is part of the thing we're doing. Yeah, we need to move that. That's the one you're talking about. So I'd like to move Amendment A8. Okay, we say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Amendment is adopted. A9. That's the later two. Okay, so that's those get the bill in the order that we would like. A3 is
number, and A9
is going to be dealt with later. So, welcome to committee. If you would please describe in some detail, not too much detail, and what we've done and what the bill would like to do. So, thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Laura Thomas Raskin. I'm with the Department of Human Services Division of Education. Would you like to start with the bill and then have a copy of the amendments after that?
Any way you like. Whatever you find more effective. So,
Article 1 amends a number of licensing-related statutes, including Chapter 45 of the Human Services Licensing Act, and those amendments are found in Sections 1 through 28. Then secondly, the Human Services Background Studies Act, which is Chapter 245, and that is the bill that Mr. Chair referred to that was recodified last session to codify the background study requirements, and those amendments are found in Sections 29 and 65. Then Section 66 and 67 contain amendments to the hearing statute, and Section 68 and 69 amend the Maltreatment of Minors and Vulnerable Adults Act, and Section 70 is the repealer. The majority of amendments that are contained in Article 1 are technical and clarifying only and reflect no policy change. There is one new policy initiative, which is the Adult Day Services Adult Foster Care, that we'll be discussing in more detail. So that being the case, I thought what I would start out with is addressing this very generally in terms of the general categories of the amendments, and then, of course, if you wish more detail in any given area. So the first area of amendments is related to background studies. And in this area, there are technical corrections, clarification, and some enhancements of current protections related to background studies. The majority of these result from the recodification that we just mentioned of the background study law by the 2003 legislature. So a lot of this is incorporating references to Chapter 245C.
I have copies of that.
The second major area of amendments is due process related amendments. And some of you may recall in the 2001 session, Representative Abler worked with us on extensive due process amendments, changing the licensing due process, really the appeal systems related to our licensing amendments. And so this session, what we're doing is a few additional streamlining and consolidation of due process rights for the individuals and agencies that are subject to our licensing amendments. Also, we are enhancing consistency across those provisions that govern notices and requests for appeals. And lastly, updating cross-references to the contested rule from the Office of Human Safety, a rule is promulgated after the temporary rules that were cited in the statute. The third area is repealing obsolete administrative rules, and we're simply moving that which is still relevant from the administrative rules, what we refer to as administrative licensing rule, into statute, and then we're able to repeal the administrative licensing rule, and that's indicated in the repealer. The fourth category is restoring provisions that were never deleted last session, and those have to do with independent living assistance services for youth that were inadvertently repealed as part of the last session's passage of the Children and Community Services Act. And then, as I indicated, there is a new licensing initiative, which we'll talk about in more detail related to adult day services and adult foster care. And before we do that, I'll just mention that Article 2 of the bill contains one amendment, and that is actually to the Department of Corrections. The statute is technical in nature, and it provides clarification regarding the background studies that we at DHS conduct for corrections.
Okay, is that the entire summary?
Yes, Mr. Chair. So if there are any questions on those parts, we can certainly try and answer them. What we can probably explain a little bit more detail about the adult foster care.
And just before we get to that part, I just had a comment. It's too bad that Peg's not here, because a policymaker's dream is to technically tweak a recodification just did. So it's, sorry. I thought it was kind of fun. So on the base portion of the bill, is there anybody in the audience that has a concern about anything that's remaining there that wasn't, not counting this new licensure aspect? Any questions from members about that?
Actually, Mr. Chair, I found it kind of hard to follow without some page numbers and and lines and a overview. So it's pretty hard to comment when there's no real reference to look at the statute and see if it's what if the change is okay.
Oh, and the summaries are still. I'm sorry, they're being copied. So, and actually, just so you know, it's what we're going to do now. We're going to take up this, lay the bill over for a little bit, take up a second bill, come back and finish up with it. Then, and the bill still has to go to full policy. So, if you have any concerns at all.
So, Mr. Chair, then, when it comes to full policy, you'll again go through that and then have reference points in the bill as we read it.
Mr. Chair, Representative Otrema, I certainly could do that now. I presume that there would be a section-by-section prepared by research staff. And I do have a section-by-section that I can present. I was trying to spare you it's 70 sections. And what I've done, though, is I've grouped it according to the five categories that I provided you, and they are very general. And then we could go from there and look at each of those categories, and I could identify within each of those categories the section numbers, if you like. For example, within background studies, I've divided that into those which are purely technical, which is the majority of those sections 11, 22, 25, 26, 34, 35, 38, 39, 40, 46, 47, 50, 52, 54, 55, 59, 60 are all technical, and that would be reflected in the summary. Then there are a group of about, it looks like eight that are clarifying, and then there are five that are enhancements of current protection. So I certainly would be happy to provide as much detail as you would like. I thought we'd start out with this.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you. Just so that I have something, and I'm sure other members are going to want that too, if not now. And it's not important right now, but it's going to go in front of policy, and so then I can take a look at it then. Or before
sure.
Then.
Would we like that in front of policy then?
Well, we'll see what the pleasure of the committee is. It's it'll be what their comfort level is and how much detail they want to take into consideration. And I apologize for the copies not being made. They're on the way. But
it's not your fault.
I'll take these. Sorry.
It's okay.
Yeah, Ray's happy. Oh, he's happy to blame me. Anyway, so let's talk about the new part, because the real controversial part, what you've got is, I mean, read it for yourself and judge, but it's pretty straightforward, especially some of those that are purely technical tweaks. But there is a part that caused a great deal of stir, which, why don't you get into that part now?
Okay, Mr. Chair, I'll talk about the family adult day services. This section, this is section 24 of the bill, is introduced, I think it's at page 23. I'll just step back a little bit to last year. Last year, you may recall that sought to expand the capacity of adult in-home adult daycare providers, expand the license capacity of those. And the scenario for adult day services provided in the home is that even if you don't want to provide foster care services, you first have to get a foster care license. And then if you have a foster care license, which is a residential license, then and only then can you provide in-home adult day services. But Representative Vanderveer's bill sought to expand that capacity so that you could have up to eight people during the day. It's seven people, but plus one for rescue services. And so the problem that we ran into over the interim was that because the capacity of the home was going over five people who may be incapable of self-preservation, the fire code, as enforced by the fire marshal's office, prohibited those arrangements from actually being realized. So our licensing statute depends on the approval of the fire marshal's office, and we could not get an approval from the fire marshal's office because this home, in fact, the one home that was at issue here, would have to be sprinkled first, have their sprinkler system installed, before it would be approved by them, and therefore before we could issue a variance in that case to extend the capacity. And so there were many, many discussions certainly on this issue. And one of the things that the department was committed to doing is to try to straighten out that issue, but also to recognize that there are people who may want to provide in-home adult day services that don't want to have to get a residential adult foster care license. The scheme is worked okay for a couple of the providers who are doing this, but it doesn't make sense for a lot of people. you get a residential license so that they can provide a non-residential service. So what the department then did is began working on creating some standards that seem to make sense for this kind of service. Using as a reference the adult foster care standards, some of them are close to relevant for this kind of service. Looking also at adult daycare center standards and using some of those, but modifying them considerably to recognize that these in-home services are a lot more informal than what you're going to find in the center. And at any rate, we kind of set a standards together, and we kind of shot them around a little bit to providers and to counties, and we've had input from people. And as a result of that, the result of that effort is the language that was introduced. Since then, however, we've had a lot more input, and we've had a lot more discussions, hours and hours of discussions about this, and really good feedback from people that has resulted in the amendments he had before you today. Representative Vandeveer has spent hours on this issue and trying to look at how do we really get a reasonable set of standards in place for people to provide this service. It's about, in the last 2 years, about $20 million of public money was spent on adult day services. And a lot of that money was going into these homes where there really were no standards that actually addressed that kind of service. They were licensed as adult foster care, but that's not what they were doing. They were providing adult day services. We think we've really come to a pretty good package of what how those types of services should be regulated. And it's not unlike, if you think of the model where we have child care centers that offer quite structured services during the day compared to family child care, where it's a lot more informal. And parents can really dictate a lot more about what the services are to their child. They can't have centers too, but it's a lot more informal arrangement. This parallels that quite a bit in that in an adult daycare center, there's a lot more contact between the center and the medical community. But in this environment, it's between the provider and the caregiver. It could be the elderly person's son or daughter who is arranged for the care. And the son or daughter is the one who gives the direction to the provider. And so it's a lot more informal, and that gets recognized in these standards. So after we spent a lot of time on that, I think we're nearly to the point where there is total agreement on that, but if you notice if you were to look closely at the 8A amendment that was adopted, this amendment is a bit of insurance to assure that we keep talking about these issues. Representative Vandeveer has a client who is very motivated to provide a really good service, and he wants to be sure, for all the right reasons, that this doesn't interfere with his ability to continue to provide the service. Well, the department's proposal here is to replace the current paradigm that exists in the law. The amendment, the 8B amendment, puts the old paradigm back in as well. So we've got the old and the new coexisting in the same bill to assure that we continue working on this.
Representative Vandeveer, do you want to comment about that or offer thoughts?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I think Director Kerber's comments are accurate. I've worked on it quite a bit. There's still some areas where my constituents would like to be a little more certain that they understand, you know, what's being done here. So we don't know that we're totally complete here. Maybe back and make a few changes. We're hopeful that we're getting there and going down the right path.
And so just so I understand, and just so people understand the track of this particular bill, it's going to go to the full committee on Monday and then go to finance, where it'll rest comfortably until all the fiscal issues in this matter gets resolved, and then it'll probably go off on its own, because I don't think there's a fiscal note in this bill, but there's just going to, with some of the questions that come up, we'll just let it, then people will be all comfortable with that. And so that's the future of this, and so there may be another amendment. Is there almost certainly an amendment yet to come to clarify this in a week or two?
Sure, there needs to be one more amendment to resolve this dual paradigm.
And this bill does lack for amendments, so I'm glad we can at least have one more. So, are there any questions on this topic?
No.
this is probably something you'd be interested in.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I do some respite work in some adult family, adult foster homes, so I'm a little bit familiar with that. I'm sure you've worked out the age you've decided on. I notice here that it says under age 55. In my experience, when you sometimes have somebody with Parkinson's or MS, they might be under 55, and they are very hard to place in any kind of daycare because there's so many times the rule is, but yet the family needs a break. And that would be something that, I don't know, in a special circumstance that you could at least ask for an exemption, because that is a huge need in what I see in doing my respite work.
Representative Vanderveer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Director Kerber, I think the variance process is still in place. We're working exactly as it does today.
Okay.
That's the intent.
Mr. Kerber.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Kerber, that's exactly right. There's a variance process in place, and that gets addressed at the very end of the bill, or the very end of this section. And there are those cases, certainly, and we have never denied a variance. The variance needs to be recommended by the county. So the only questions we ask is whether or not the county is in agreement that all other alternatives have been at least considered. One of the concerns is if it would have dropped down to age 18 is that for a lot of 18-year-olds, there are better alternatives than adult daycare.
Okay.
Not for all of them, but for most of them there are.
Mr. Chair, and usually who I see are the people that are caught in that gap. They're too old. I mean, they're between 40 and 50, or maybe late 30s, and then they end up, and a lot of times it's a caregiver, a family person who's the caregiver and needs a day or a respite, and it's almost impossible to find for that Parkinson's MS patient who just needs, that the caregiver just needs a break for a day or two.
So I hear from the association that these are some welcome positive changes that are streamlining matters. And does anybody, any members have questions about this? Anybody in the audience wants to, is any concern in the audience about where this bill is going or cautions you want to offer to us? Thank you. And I think we're good to go. Thank you very much. And we'll see you in the full committee. The bill is laid over. Now for just a few minutes while we work on the...
I just want to ask one more question. I realize that this is a family adult daycare service. If you're an adult family foster care home, are there provisions in here to allow you to take one or two or whatever the number might be to do some daycare? Can that be combined?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lemmer, yes. In fact, it speaks to that issue directly. Because that has been the model, we know that there are about 45 providers out there now, about 4,000 foster care providers. About 45 of them are doing adult-based services, or at least they're receiving some government funds for those services. And so what would happen here is if a provider is licensed to, say, serve five people in adult foster care, under this bill, they can accept three more people during the day. So the total number of present in the day. So they could do that under this.
And thank you for bringing this forward.
Representative Vanderveer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Latremba, that's been the challenge here, is to keep the advantageous characteristics of the adult foster here. That's been my constituent concern, that if we get away from that, we open the door to a lot of different problems that don't currently exist and that have developed with that roadmap over the many years that it's been in place. So I appreciate that.
Very good. Actually, so is there any more discussion about this topic? I think that's the end of this. I made an error. Representative, do you want to put your amendment on this? This is the kind of thing that you're
Mr. Chair, do you think I'll get shot?
Well, actually, I'd like you to offer it,
okay.
Just so we can
I'll
have a chance to make the lobbyists earn some money. But actually, I'd like to, you guys are done now, so you can step down. Maybe if you want to both come up here and show your faces, DM, you're free to go. Thank you. No, you're supposed to bring up. Thanks. And members, this topic was heard a bit without a lot of notice last time on Monday on a bill that really didn't fit. This bill actually fits better, although there's a fiscal note which this brings forward. I just thought it'd be good if Mr. Kelleher could explain actually what's intended. You want to offer, at least for discussion purposes, you want to offer this? Should we talk about it and we'll just move along? Would that be satisfactory?
I can move my amendment.
Okay. So we moved, Amendment A3 has been moved. And I'll just comment, I did some research, and I don't know the size of the fiscal note, but there is one, and it could be substantial, and the department could comment, but they are not sure they're ready to do that. But this bill that we have currently has no fiscal note, and if you read today's governor's idea, we're taking money from places I'm a little nervous about to fund some things, but there's a lot of discussion to be had about that, and so I'm not sure this would be the first thing to do if we had money to spare. So, Mr. Kelleher, would you comment just upon another view that
Mr. Chair, do you want me to just explain what it does?
Oh, yeah, why don't you explain it, please, if you would. Explain your amendment, please.
Basically, all it does is allow a person, a hearing aid dispenser, who has been approved through the Department of Health to get reimbursed for the same thing, the exact same thing that the audiologists are being reimbursed for. So it doesn't change any licensure, nothing. All it does is lets them get reimbursed for exactly the same thing that's being done. And they're licensed through the department, and that's all it's doing.
Mr. Keller, it sounds like a simple proposal. Is there more that we should know, perhaps?
Mr. Chair, the best thing about this is I've had this out for about 4 or 5 years, and finally somebody's going to come and talk to me.
There you go. So,
Mr. Keller, it's your day. Please talk to us.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Tom Keller. I'm here representing the Minnesota Speech Hearing Language Association. Representative Trimba, I do understand that the bill has been around for a number of years, and I think we did talk about it once, but I don't remember. I know I've had some discussions about the bill at the Senate as well. Needless to say, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, the Minnesota Speech Hearing Language Association, and I no longer represent the Minnesota Academy of Audiology, but I have heard through them, since we have some dual memberships between the two associations, that they are greatly opposed to the bill, I think would be an accurate characterization. Under 153A, the statutory language for a hearing instrument dispenser is a certificate that very explicitly, expressly delineates what hearing instrument dispensers may do. Last year, the legislature licensed speech-language pathologists and audiologists, creating a scope of practice with a very broad list of practices and activities that they're allowed to do. To my knowledge, hearing instrument dispensers licensed that are certified under 153A cannot provide hearing tests for medical assistance at all, or either for those under 18. And I apologize for not having that exactly on top of my head.
I think not under 18.
For those 18 and old. Thank you, Mr. Keller. Yes, Mr. Chair. So obviously it would be a new benefit or provider of a current benefit under MA, and that's where the fiscal note would come in. The other part is in Section 2, where they talk about an audiologic evaluation on 923. I think that is I'm not an audiologist, Mr. Chair, I'm a member of the committee, but a hearing test is one thing, and that's what is allowed under their certificate under 153A. But an audiologic evaluation is much more in-depth and a much more intensified examination of a person's hearing or lack thereof. And so I think I had a couple of audiologists here. They would be much more cognizant and capable of describing the differences between the two. But I think you could equate it that there are just two quantum leap differences in types of tests and evaluations. And the amount of skill and training you would need are greatly different for each of those two tests.
Mr. Kelleher, what's the training of a hearing instrument dispenser?
Do you know, Mr. Chair, actually, this is kind of unfair because I told...
we talked to the guy.
For us to get into too much because Greg Wales, but I don't mind doing this, but we did tell, because of the snowstorm coming and stuff, he's not here, so I don't want this to get beat up so bad when he's not here, and he's been here many times, and nobody was in the audience to respond to the times that he's been here. But I don't. You can ask the questions, but I just want us all to be aware that, he wanted to be here, and I
Well, I didn't mean it that. I just was.
I didn't think you did. I just wanted to lay the groundwork for where we're at.
Okay. Well, that's anyway. So, I, my interest in law. Well, just do you want to say anything else?
Not yet, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, and I mean the problem for today is the fiscal note, and the problem in my policy brain is that if this were going to be discussed, you'd want to have a bigger room because there'd be a bunch of hearing instrument dispensers saying why this would be a great idea and it makes sense based upon their training, whatever that may be, and then the other half, just as full or fuller, would be the audiologist explaining how the world may end if we do that. So, and then we'll have to decide something. But
yeah, and Mr. Chair, you and I have discussed this. You know, the fiscal note can appear one way on a spreadsheet, but doesn't take into consideration the fact that in my area, when you have a hearing aid test, if they're in the nursing home, they actually take an ambulance from the nursing home to the audiologist, which is then billed to medical assistance or Medicare or whatever, medical assistance. And then they go back to the nursing home, and then when they have to, that's for the testing, and then they come back again in the nurse, in an ambulance to the nursing home. And so those kind of costs are not going to come up, show up on a spreadsheet. And so there are hidden costs that ultimately we think are more expensive than what the spreadsheet would say, because hearing aid dispensers actually go to the nursing homes and do these tests.
Mr. Keller.
Mr. Chair and Representative Otremba, I have spoke with Mr. Wallace Wales at least three times that I know of, not this year but last year, and he certainly understands our concerns as well as we understand his concerns regarding this proposal. Mr. Chair, to answer your question real fast, to my knowledge, a person need only have a high school diploma to take the hearing instrument dispenser examination under 153A, and audiologists have at least a master's degree. Some of them have a doctorate degree, not as a doctor, but a PhD.
I appreciate that, and maybe as this, just to give you some hope for the future on this thing, and there, is there areas in the state that are underserved by audiologists, you know?
Mr. Chair, I do not have the math with me, but my understanding is it's not to the extent that it's described by the hearing instrument dispensers.
Which is why I think if we did this, it would be a bigger room with a couple of hours, and then we get the cookies.
And Mr. Chair, there are a lot of people, and some of us are going to be there at a certain time when they can't afford the audiologist. As you know, I have a niece who's deaf, and they're without insurance or without any kind of reimbursement. It's very expensive, and it's at least a way for some of these people to be able to hear at a lower cost. And I liken it to a lot of turf wars that go on between professions, and at least are at the table together and looking for some ways to compromise.
Ms. Anderson, did you have a thought?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I was not in favor of this earlier in the week, and I'm still not in favor of it because of the fact it's really a scope of practice and an education issue, and because of that, I just cannot go along with moving the care and the evaluations to someone who has not had the education to back them up.
I just, Mr. Chair, and I'm just going to add this, and I apologize for Mr. Wales not being here, but it is done in at least one other state. So there is a precedent set, and...
Well, I'm glad we can talk about it, and I think some of these things have a hard time getting brought up. It's formal hearings, and this is an appropriate bill to bring it up to talk about. I think there's a little more food to think about it, and maybe as this goes forward in any capacity at all, we should... I can't imagine we're sending people in ambulances to get audiological exams. And given how lean whoever's paying for that thing, I mean, if the nursing home's paying for it, or if the county, or if it's any state, federal match, or whatever, it's not a good way to spend our money. So if you could comment about that, that would be interesting.
Or take it back. About that, but I will try to make this promise, Mr. Chair, to Representative Otremba. I think some people in the building would know that last year when we were discussing licensing audiologists, we drew the ire of the otolaryngologist and had to sit down and discuss what range is our scope of practice versus theirs, and those sorts of things. I will try to get a couple of my people in contact with Mr. Wells or yourself and try to see if there is some middle ground to discuss on this. I know Mr. Chairman, Representative Abler has encouraged me to do that on a couple of other issues that I'm working on this year as well. Representative Norton. So I will try to do that.
And you, Mr. Chair, I really appreciate that. And I, you know, you and I are friends. We can do that.
Representative Norton.
Mr. Chair, I'm just going to point out that not all these patients have been talking about the transportation by ambulance. Most of the nursing homes in my district have their own vans. That's how they transport people back and forth to the clinic. Unless it's a medical emergency, then they would call an ambulance. So it may not be the same everywhere, but in my area, that the cost would be very minimal to transport these people.
So did you want to withdraw it now? Or do you want to still go back?
I'll lay it on the table until we get together and work something out.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Keller. I appreciate it. See, now you can report that you talked about this, and this is positive. Okay, now I'm going to lay this bill on the table temporarily, and we're going to take up House File, the other one. The county, 2223. Do you want to come up, Maureen, and bring your pen? I want to you at the table, Maureen, just because I want to see you at the table for once here. And this is a bill that's it's partly resolved, and I think that when it was brought forward, it seemed simpler to me than I think it is now. And I think there's a fair amount of misunderstanding about what the current law actually says as amended last year. And I think, members, my intention is here is we're going to amend the bill, and we promised a sequel to the previous bill. There'll be certainly a sequel to this bill. This bill also, I believe, will track to policy and then to finance as well, because just to be sure we haven't incurred a fiscal note with our work, we want to make sure finance says it's clean to go as a standalone or as under some other vehicle. But who's going to go first? Ms. Bellis, welcome to the committee. You don't get to the table very often. It's nice to have you.
I'm Maureen Bellis. I'm a human services lobbyist for Anoka County. I'll just give a brief background, and then I'll turn it over to Jerry Peterson, who works with the Mental Health Division in Anoka County, and then Bill, who can explain the language change that we have come to.
And members, there's an oral amendment that you'll be getting. It was written about 45 minutes ago.
And you'll notice I'm very careful not to say agreed to, because I think we really are not fully agreed.
Thank you.
The language what's in front of them, Danielle? An amendment to AO4, or what does it look like?
AO4960, I think.
Article 3, miscellaneous. Okay, so 0960. This language, which is in 256B0596, deals with mental health case management. This came into the law last year on the Senate side, agreed to as part of the final budget bill. If you will notice what the new law stated when it was enacted last year, it says that counties shall contract with eligible providers willing to provide mental health case management services and so on. And then it lists some characteristics that the providers had to have. In our county, we read this as requiring us to contract out for mental health case management services. At a time when we actually did case management in two ways. We did some of it in-house, and we did contract out some of it. And I'll let Jerry talk about sort of the impact of this on Anoka County.
Well, Mr. Chair, my name is Jerry Peterson, the manager of disability services at Anoka County, and mental health case management services in one area, some of my offices. When we became aware of this, law. For us, it just been, and I'll just make this brief, and a couple different things. It changed our normal process about how we contracted for mental health case management services. The usual process for us is to evaluate our need, look at the dollars available, and then request it out for services. And this new law changed that. It basically, in our reading of it, is that you shall, or it required us to contract with a vendor who came forward in providing that medical assistance services. The other big implication for us was that if that was true, then there, because of the way mental health case management is funded, there is a county cost to us, basically, because it's an MA service and how this is set up. There's basically a 50% match from the county. So it created some fiscal liability risk for us. And so, I would say we've had some good conversation with our mental health partners here. We've always have had good relationships with them, hoping to try to work this out so we can alleviate some of our concerns and yet meet some of the desire, which is, I think, for anybody who's in the mental health field, to make sure there's services available for the mentally ill. So I think in a nutshell, that is probably the easiest way to say that. So.
Mr. Conley?
Mr. Chairman, Bill Conley, representing the Mental Health Association. We have had good conversations, and the Mental Health Association did support this language that was adopted last year. Mental health case management under Medicaid is somewhat unique. Generally speaking, Medicaid federal law prohibits any restriction on otherwise qualified vendors. Mental health case management actually has a niche that provides a slightly different approach. One of the things in supporting the language that was created last year was to do one thing but not to do two things. And I think the second thing was what created the problem. What we were attempting to ensure is that there was an adequate supply of case managers for people who had serious mental illness, were on Medicaid, and needed case management services. That is not universal across the state. So what we were attempting to do, never thinking, quite frankly, about the fact that every county also provides case management by themselves, many of the counties likewise contract out for case management. So in other words, both entities, multiple entities, provide case management services. The intent of this was to ensure last year's bill that outside vendors with actually a higher degree of providing services, in other words, they would have to meet, if you look on the amendment, page 1, line 15, meet with the clients at least once per week. That's actually, current law requires one meeting per month. So in other words, this would actually create a fourfold increase or a threefold increase, depending on how you count it, for the contact with the client. We were trying to ensure adequate supply of case management services. Never thinking it, if you read this language in one particular way, as it currently reads, it could be implied that the county, in essence, has to outsource 100% of the case management services. Ergo, they could not provide case management themselves. That was never the intent of the people that were advocating for ensuring that there were more case managers. So I think that council has a verbal amendment that would, one, on line 8, reinsert the shall, take out the may, and then after line 16, add a sentence. And I would prefer to have council read that sentence rather than mine. Mine may be slightly different, but I think we agree on that.
Ms. Pinelli, you want to read that for us?
Mr. Chair, members, the amendment would be on page 1, line 16, and I'm working off of the AO4-0960 amendment. Page 1, line 16, after the period, insert, this section is not intended to limit the ability of a county to provide its own case management services, period.
Ms. Bellis.
Can we insert mental health case management services? I think it needs that clarification.
And Ms. Pinelli, just to make it, it was our intention, thinking that this was just a simple little bill, how hard could it be? Read my emails, I'll tell you how hard it can be. That this is going to be amended on to 2277, so perhaps you want to make this a delete all to address House File 2223 would be appropriate as you would make your tactical corrections. So we'll simply do a delete all, and how's that sound? That'd be clean. That way the members have the right paper in front of them. So is that clear? Any comment about that? Anybody from the audience wants to comment about this? Is that Roland, you're thinking on the right track here? Okay, thanks. Any questions from what we're doing here? And so we have a delete all, Telstar 2223, addressing this thing. I was just surprised as I listened to the discussion, whatever day it was, yesterday or the day before, when one person thought that the counties were bound and one thought they were not bound. And so I'm happy this came forward so it can be clear, because it's one thing to not agree with what the law is. I mean, to how bad the law is, or disagree that it should have been changed, but it's a way different thing to disagree how and what it was changed into. So this is a kind of a good sort of deep policy work that I think that we're good at sometimes. Members, any questions? We're prepared to vote. All in favor of the amendment as amended, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Amendment's adopted. I would now like to, any discussion about the bill? I'd like to move that House File 2223 as amended be referred to whatever blink to wherever it's going to blink to, back to the full committee. All in favor, any questions about that, members? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. That's right. Want to hear the no's first? Nah, I don't want to hear the no's. Anyway, anybody opposed, better speak up quick, because it's going to go back to the full committee. Thank you. So the motion prevails and the bill is re-referred. Last item of the day is now to take up, come up now if you'd like, a bill that I thought was pretty simple, and maybe this is the easy one of the three. Ms. Abdolden, welcome to the committee. We're now on, it's sort of House File 2655, but we're going to amend this onto House File 2227, thinking it to be ready to go. And is an amendment, or is this the amendment that you've corrected? Is A09, is A9 the amendment? Ms. Pinelli, is A9 the amendment that we want, or is there an amendment to the amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair and members, the H2277A9 amendment is the correct amendment.
As it is. Okay, so members, we'll reconsider, or we'll take off the table House File 2277, and I would like to move Amendment A9, and before we vote on that, because it's a whole different topic, we'll discuss it and we can vote with some informed consent. Ms. Abdolden, welcome to the committee.
Why are you here?
Sue Abdolden, National Alliance for the Mentally Ill in Minnesota. This is a very simple bill. What we wanted to make sure is that children who have serious emotional disturbance, when they reach age 18, some of them stay in the school system because they are under special education. And that those transition years can be very difficult, especially if you try to coordinate all these interagency services. And so what we didn't want to have happen is that they lose their children's case manager because they turn 18, even though they're still in the school system and have all that interagency thing going on. And we have a hard time keeping some of these kids in school, and so we think this is really important that they keep their same team. So this would just allow them, so there's no cost to this, it would allow them to keep their same case manager. Everyone agrees that's a good thing until they're out of the school system.
Any questions?
Sounds like a good plan.
Have enthusiastic support up on this end. Shall we quit while we're ahead? If we're prepared to vote, all in favor of Amendment A9, say aye.
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 Opposed? The amendment is adopted, and you have done your business. Now we need to, we now have before us House File 2277 as amended substantially. Much improved, I think, for all the work of this august body and the good department who has labored tirelessly to codify and recodify. So, any questions about the House Bill 2277 next September? Are you comfortable with moving this on to the full committee?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Any other members have questions? After we approve it. Before. In case we have any details we're not clear on, you're authorized to clarify our intent in a way that you believe is suitable to our intent.
That covers it.
Tell me what I said. Anyway, there's no more objections to the vote coming pretty quick. I'd like to renew my motion that House File 2277 recommended pass and be referred to the full committee. Any questions about that? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails and the bill is referred. And there's any more business that we should do that we've neglected at this body? Comments in the audience? Too late. We're adjourned.